Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
I'm a little lover boy. Time to talk some more NFL football with Bill Moss. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Nate, what do you say, buddy? How's it going?
Oh, man. Yesterday, just sitting at home watching the NFL without any Chiefs football to worry about at all, and it was like a constant reminder of how nice it is to watch the Chiefs every week. And how lucky we are to have this team right now, because the rest of the league, most of the rest of the league ain't so good compared to the Chiefs. Bill, what did you think?
You know, I can't believe, you know, I haven't talked to you yet, but that was my feelings as well. I was going to ask you guys this morning what you saw this weekend and all these teams. Tell me who's a good team that's out there right now. And I think you're hard-pressed to say anything else, but Kansas City and Buffalo. What I saw this weekend was unbelievable. And if you're in a survivor pool, if you're still left, these last two weekends have been brutal.
Yeah, you just think someone's going to be bad and they'll rise up and beat somebody, and the games just aren't over. You know, it's pretty interesting. I think the league has changed a lot, Bill, over the last 10 years or so. It's a little more wide open, and you don't see a lot of 17-14s anymore like Pittsburgh and New England were yesterday, and right. It's wide open play. There are people taking chances, going for two, doing unconventional things. I guess the unconventional stuff is turning conventional at this point. I like the product, though. I think it's a lot of fun, and that's what they've always kind of wanted. They don't want to have too much dominance, so they like these upsets and different things like this. So I was certainly very happy to sit yesterday and watch games and watch Red Zone and just enjoy it. But I do appreciate the fact that the Chiefs have a great quarterback, an established system, an established coaching staff that you kind of know what you're going to get from. They can make mistakes, for sure. But there's so much unknown out there with a lot of these new coaches and new quarterbacks and things like that. It's comfortable to be a Chiefs fan right now.
You're right, Todd. And you talked about, you know, the coaching staff and the organization, and, you know, they're solid. They know what they're doing. They know how to go about things. The price of winning in this league is so great right now, with the salaries that are passed out there to not only players but coaches as well, that you're forced to do everything at a warp speed pace of mind, you know? And it's not working for a lot of these young coaches that have young coaching staffs and high-dollar quarterbacks, such as in Denver, the case, right? Mm-hmm. And nothing seems to be working with them. And you couple that with the collective bargaining agreement and the limited amount of time you're able to practice, and this is what you're seeing. This is exactly what you're seeing. I saw 12 teams yesterday that looked identical, not figured out who they are offensively and defensively, mistakes continually happening on the sidelines, with time management and play calling, and teams that are just flat out unprepared. So, you know, that's what I saw this past weekend, and you're right. What a breath of fresh air that we have what we have here in Kansas City.
Yeah, well, it's like half of the battle now is just who gets the most out of the time they're allowed to be together, right? Since it's so limited, it's, you know, who can maximize it? And, you know, another part of the equation, Bill, you talk about the price and the money that's involved. And I want to get your perspective as a former player on this. Todd and I know it's a shock. We didn't play in an NFL locker room, so, you have a better perspective on this to me. But, you know, in the old days in college especially, the coach, it was kind of his way or the highway. And players didn't really have a choice. They either got in line or they were out of the mix. Even in college, it's changing now. But in the NFL, the money's so big and all that, the players choose whether or not they believe in the coach. And obviously, Andy Reid's got the full buy-in of almost everybody, if not everybody, on the team. And if you're not bought in, some of those veterans are going to pull you aside and go, hey, this guy knows what the hell he's doing. You better pay attention. If you're Nathaniel Hackett, and you've had the first 2 weeks that he's had on the job, and you've got no track record as a head coach to fall back on, how hard is it for a guy like that to convince all these pros that he knows what he's doing?
It's hard. It's real hard to get people to buy into what you're doing. You know, it's hard to get people to buy into what you're doing when I was playing, too. Because you have young coaches that come along, and you're like, who's this guy? And you have to win over a locker room. And the only way you do it, you can't do it by force, you know. It's not, hey, my way or the torture chamber, right? You have to win them over by knowing what you're doing. And that comes together through wins and showing that the reason that they're doing the things the way they do, it comes out as a W at the end of the week. So that's the only way to do it. Now, early in the season, we've seen this probably for the last 7 years in the NFL. Nobody knows who they are yet. They haven't had enough time together to have a personality offensively and defensively. They're trying to figure out. Most teams are trying to figure out what they have. And the Chiefs included in that. They just have a special guy at quarterback that makes it look a lot easier. But they're clearly, you saw in week two, a little bit different than week one, right? I mean, there's some things that they've got to get the kinks worked out. How are all those receivers going to gel together? Where does everybody fit in? And they're working through that. Fortunately, they're working through it with W's. But you see the other teams out there, it's glaring that they have no idea who they are yet. And it just feels like they're just pulling plays out of the air or looking at that play sheet and saying, oh, let's try this. Let's try this over here. And there's no flow in what they're trying to accomplish.
We're talking to Bill Moss right now about the National Football League. Chiefs are 2-0. They'll be at the Colts on Sunday. Buffalo looked very good in their opener, and they haven't played in forever. They're going to play tonight. I think that's a team that we can count on being there when it happens. But right now, they're looking up in the standings at a 2-0 Miami team. And we haven't talked about this one yet today, Bill. But yesterday, they were down. I mean, it was toast. They were down 21 points in their fourth quarter. And that is a brand-new head coach who right now – I mean, we've heard Tyreek Hill talk on his podcast and things. He calls him by the wrong name. He calls him McDaniels, and it's McDaniel. That's fine. I'm not going to nitpick Tyreek Hill, except I just did. But they've got a belief, and that is a young, fast team that's got something to them right now. Now, they were toast yesterday, but they end up finding a way to win, to go beat an experienced coach on the road with a superstar quarterback. So they got that done. How much can a win like that do for a young team in that kind of category we're talking about here, this belief and this kind of getting momentum going early in an NFL season?
Yeah, I think I think these guys are already bought into their coach. You know, he just has that cool factor about him that the guys kind of clamor. He's got a quick wit. He gets his point across to the young guys, and they think they've got a cool coach. And yesterday, was watching that game in the fourth quarter was just amazing to me. There was just no quit in them at all. When a lot of young guys, sometimes they don't have that dog in them to get out of a hostile atmosphere like that when you're down double digits in the fourth quarter. And they the young group of kids, pulled it together. I thought it was amazing. And I think what you saw there is solely contributed to their coach.
Well, they got some athletes on offense too, not just Tyreek Hill. Waddle's incredible. Yeah. That, tell you what, they play the Bills next weekend, and that's going to be a good one. But the Bills, as you mentioned, Bill, they play tonight. We get a doubleheader tonight, which I'm all fired up about, 6:15 and 7:30, Titans, Bills, and then Vikings, Eagles. The Titans are off to an 0-1 start. They were supposed to be one of those good teams you mentioned, and they lost to the Giants in week one, who are 2-0, by the way. But
yeah.
You expecting anything from the Titans going to Buffalo tonight?
You know, yeah, I do. They're just a good team, you know. I like their coach. He's tough, and he has them all on the same page. And, you know, they're very reminiscent of the Patriots way. They don't make big mistakes, you know. They don't lose games by doing stupid things. They're well coached, they're disciplined, and they play good, tough defense. And when you have that combination, you're going to be in ball games at the end of the fourth quarter. You're going to be in there fighting. So, I it's not a cakewalk. Buffalo has a powerhouse. They've got a powerful offense. They've got a really good defense that's underrated, not talked about. But, you know, Titans just have that way of keeping themselves in position to strike at any time.
Yeah, and the Titans lost last week, but it was a two-point conversion as
right.
time expired to lose, right? And the Giants kicked a last-second field goal yesterday. They're 2-0, and they got to be happy about where they are, but they haven't dominated anyone. I think the Bills, at least to me, just one game, and the way they ended last year, the hard part for them is you sit through all last year thinking you should have beat the Chiefs, right? And you know you were better than the Bengals. You would have had the game at home, and you might have been in the Super Bowl and all those kind of things. And they looked like they put all that in their gut, and they fought real hard, and they went out there, and they beat the Rams at their place. That was their Super Bowl for them, right? But can they keep that up for 17 weeks this year? Can they keep that up? They kept it up all offseason, and I think they've got the recipe to do it. So I think they're going to be a real challenger, obviously, for the Chiefs in the AFC. But I am curious to see what they look like at home tonight. But I expect the best of the Bills because they look like they have the look of a team that's on a mission right now this year.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I'd agree with you. They're scary for sure. But, you know, it is a long season. And every time we've talked about it for the last 5 years or so, what you see in the beginning of the season isn't what it's going to be at the end. You know, nobody saw the Bengals last year, right? Everyone was talking about other teams. And they just kept on going about their business and doing stuff, and they stayed healthy, and that's a big factor in it too. So it's a long season. What teams are right now aren't necessarily what they're going to be at the end of the year. And for the Chiefs, it's just a matter of getting a little bit better every week. Just keep plugging along, try to get better at each position. So and then you look at this Eagles Minnesota game tonight too. You know. Is Hurts their guy in Philadelphia? You know what Minnesota is, and everybody's been trying to run Kirk Cousins out of the league forever, but they're solid and they're good on defense, and they've got a heck of a receiving core. They're a dangerous team too. That just for whatever reason they're always under the radar, and nobody ever gives them credit.
And they have a coach that it looks like one game in their players love up there too. Mike Zimmer was old school, and they got a young guy now, this O'Connell, and he's just acting different than what they had before. So that can make them a dangerous team, I suppose. There's so many new coaches in the league. We got to watch how they all go. But some returns, like Nate mentioned in Denver, are not good right now, and some are super happy right now with their coaches.
Yeah, it's a big thing, you know. Understanding the young kids now is you have to find a way to connect with them. And one of the things I always said about coaches, I mean, if you've got a coach that was anywhere along their career that they were a teacher, you've got the right guy. And you look at some of the greatest coaches in the history of the NFL, they're all school teachers somewhere along the line. And Andy Reid is in that category. And he finds ways to connect with his guys. He finds ways to get his point across to guys, and he knows each and every player is motivated differently, and sometimes you have to talk to them differently. You know, we had a bunch of guys in Kansas City on teams I played with where, you know, one guy would get his ass chewed for hardly doing anything, and the other guy got coddled, and because that's how you got how to get your point across. They knew you have to know how to handle certain players certain ways, and that's a big part of it. a lot of young coaches come in and think, you know, they're going to light the world on fire with some new deal, and they're going to outcoach everybody, and they're going to be the smartest, they're going to stay up all night. You got to win your players over. That's the first thing. And you win them over, and you get your point across to them. They're bought in, and they're bought in for life. So that's the challenge these young guys have to go through, and it'll be interesting to see as the season progresses which one of these young coaches, because there's a bunch of them out there, are going to be able to capture their team and get them to play the way they want.
So the Chiefs are going to take on a winless Indianapolis Colts team this weekend, and you know, the soccer fan in me, you know, kind of admires the fact that they've got a draw on their resume, but football fans don't usually like that, Bill. This Colts team looked terrible this weekend too against Jacksonville. Do you expect them to have the kind of bounce back, like, hey, their pride was damaged, and they're going to come out and they're going to try to make a statement in this game against the Chiefs? Or is this just a bad team going up against a good team on Sunday?
That's a great question. And that's part of the early part of the season that I was talking about. You know, last year, when you talked about the Colts, you're talking about a team that was a damn good football team that probably was a quarterback away from going into the playoffs and possibly going deep into the playoffs. They had integral parts. You know, they had a real good defense. They could run the ball. They got good receivers. They were dangerous. Then you go out and you get Matty Ice, and I don't know what's transpired since then. But Frank Reich teams aren't normally like that in what you saw last weekend. So for them to get a bagel on the scoreboard, I mean, that's hard, man. And that can be real dangerous, too, especially the kind of dangerous when you put yourself in the Colts' shoes, right? 0-2, and you worked all offseason, worked out hard, training camp, all those things to start off 0-2. That's, you know, that's demoralizing. Then you have to take on, which is arguably the best team in the NFL, the Kansas City Chiefs. That situation creates danger, I think. When you say take a draw on that, that's not the case here, man. I'd be very leery of going into Indianapolis and playing this team.
Bill Moss is our guest here on the Border Patrol this morning, talking some National Football League. It is Chiefs and Colts coming up. We're a couple games into the Chiefs season. Have you seen anything that you don't like out of the Chiefs so far? They're 2-0, but you know, coaches love to nitpick and find something. You got to be coachable. It hasn't been perfect. Do you have anything that concerns you right now in the Chiefs, first off, on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, well, you know, there's some holes, right? I mean, but here's the thing that I see. They're just mistakes, right, that a young defense will make. These aren't a glaring weakness. We saw our defense have glaring weaknesses over the course of the last 3 years, right? We've seen that. I don't think there's anything glaring that jumps out of you. I think it's a young, athletic, enthusiastic bunch, and that's what it takes to play defense. And I think they're just going to continue to get better all year long. And the depth they have at all positions is, you know, the secondary went from depleted nothing last year to, you know, if McDuffie's healthy, a rich, deep group, right? The linebacking core 2 years ago was horrible. Now you have a rich, deep group, athletic guys that can play, and I love it. And then the edge rushers thus far have held up. So I see good things coming for this defense.
What maybe excites you most? You say you see good things coming. What in what areas in specific are you most excited?
Well, they're going to gel together better as a defense. You know, they seemed a little spotty. They'll give up a run here and there, 5-7 yards. Those things need to be tightened up. You see pieces fall apart. You just saw breakdown in coverage, but it's a young group, and they're going to gel better together collectively. You have to play together over a period of time to get a feel for one another and work together as a unit. And it's hard to do in 2 weeks, especially, you know, that you have a young starter go down week one, you have to change things around. Those are tough. So as the season progresses, this group, the longer they play together, are going to get better and better. And Spags is going to be able to do more and more with them.
Billy, on the front, the other side of the ball there, we were talking to Grunny maybe 2 weeks ago or something, and he was mentioning how his second year as a pro was harder than the first year, because they, you know, the league got a book on you and all that. The Chiefs have a couple of second-year guys playing in interior next to each other in Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. And I don't think they've been, like, dominant so far this year. I think they got beat up a little bit this past week. What are your thoughts about where this Chiefs offensive line is this year? It was a pleasant surprise last year, but they need to back that up.
Yeah, so, you know, it is. Tim's point was spot on. The first year you're playing, it's just a whirlwind. Every week is something new that you haven't experienced. Every place you go, every stadium you're in, every bus trip, every hotel, everything is new. And it just, it's mind-blowing how fast it comes and goes. And then it's just a whirlwind, and you catch them off guard. You talk about having a book on you. It's kind of a book, but I don't see anything that can prevent this offensive line from being a dominant. The thing that I'd like to see them do more is just rely on the run a little bit more than they do, and that hasn't happened.
All right, Bill, final question. What's your prediction for the game on Sunday?
Sunday, I see a Chiefs win, but, you know, it's going to be a struggle. I think it's going to be a tight one. I don't think they're going to go in there and just walk away. I think they're going to get the best of Indy like they get the best of every team they play. And it's going to go back and forth, but at the end of the deal, you got number 15, and that's a win.
Sounds good, Bill. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, guys, where's SSJ?
He's just to get a little vacation for a couple of days.
Vacay day.
I think he might be awake now. He wasn't awake earlier. He texted us, so.
Okay, good for him. He deserves it.
All right, buddy.
Yep.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, that is Bill Moss. We'll be back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati with you, joined once again by my good buddy Matt Beisler, who is the champion of a great program in Kansas City run by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City called the Blue KC Sporting Samaritan Program. This program is in its seventh year. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City, Sporting KC and Matt are once again teaming up to honor local teachers and students who are making a difference in the Kansas City community. The best part is you, the listener, get to nominate them. And we've got one of our winners on the line with us right now. Tyler Schmidt, an eighth grade science teacher at Grain Valley South Middle School in Grain Valley, Missouri. Tyler, thanks for joining us, man. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I just got done with soccer practice. I couldn't be any hot and smelly. So doing great.
Hot and smelly. Matt probably knows a thing or two about that after some soccer practices. Hey, tell us about how you found out maybe that you were up for the award and how you found out that you won it.
So honestly, I had an email on my school email that notified me to let me know that I nominated. I was told that my principal of my building, Jim Myers, had nominated me, and I was super excited. I love Sporting Kansas City and absolutely love soccer. Grew up with it, coach it now. Was just floored that I was going to be getting any kind of opportunity. I run home. I tell my wife about it. She's like, "You got to be kidding me. I have a nomination typed up myself for you, but I hadn't sent it in because I thought it was kind of selfish to nominate my own husband." So the fact that she had thought of me as well was just like, wow, I can't believe people are thinking of me for this opportunity. So it was great right away.
Matt, why don't you tell us what your experience was like getting together with Tyler for this whole thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Tyler really enjoyed getting to know him and his family. We met out at the Sporting KC game. And Tyler, remind me what game it was. Who'd we play?
It was the LAFC game.
Yep. I do remember that now, and Tyler and I immediately bonded. We have kids the same ages, and so we were talking about everything and all the craziness that happens within our households. But right away, I could sense, you know, Tyler's passion for soccer and his knowledge of the game. I really enjoyed sitting with Tyler during the game and actually talking about tactics. He was telling me about some of his, you know, coaching strategies and some of the challenges that coaching kids that he faces. But yeah, I mean, I love meeting Tyler and his family and having him down on the field. I'm curious to get Tyler's opinion on what his experience was like in pregame warmup down on the field.
It was great. I think the best opportunity was that I got to take so many of my family members down onto the field with us, and honestly getting their reactions about how things were going. My sister in particular was just like, wow, like this is so neat. And then when it came time for the players to come out on the field, I loved grabbing my daughter, who's a soccer player. She plays for Sporting Lee Summit, and being like, look, there they are. There's Johnny Russell. There's, you know, pointing out all the guys. She has no idea who I'm talking about, but like, I just was so excited and to have everybody down there with me. I got to turn around and see my principal and another fellow teacher up in the suite and wave at them. It just overall was a life experience that I'll never forget.
So, and once again, the program presented by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City is meant to honor great people in our community, and particularly teachers like Tyler. And I think it's interesting, Tyler, to listen to you talk about coaching, because I'm the proud coach of the fifth grade girls Glowing Dragons team. And it's a really, I find, like, rewarding and fulfilling process, because you have a chance to teach kids about life lessons through the vehicle of sports. And I'm curious, for you as a teacher, do you see a lot of parallels to what you do in the classroom compared to what you do out on the soccer field with those kids?
Of course. I try to live my life with integrity, not just for myself, but for those around me. I'm the same person in all aspects of my game and all aspects of my life, and always out to try to benefit those that are around me. I try to pass on the positive energy. Today was the first day of school, and everything in all of my classes was all about taking the events that occur in your life, but reacting. The huge line of life, that if you were to measure our life on a line, our line's pretty big, but if you took the section of that line out that you have actual control over, it's very small. You have very little control over your life, and most of it is reacting to the things that occur in your life. The number of students that I have this year on my caseload that have high anxiety and depression, things that are popping up more and more, it seems like each year, that's the ultimate lesson that I want to teach my students this year. And hopping right into practice with the same mojo. We had a group in a small-sided game that was just getting hammered with goals today. I think they were down like 5, and they were like, great, we're going to be running at the end. And I told them, hey, those other goals are over. Those opportunities are over. Don't let prior successes and failures affect your next effort. You got to go get it. It's all about reacting to the things and controlling what you can control. And it doesn't matter if it's in the classroom or the soccer field or in life. That, to me, is the best way to live it. So that's how I am.
Man, that is awesome stuff, Tyler. And Nate, before we go here, I want to highlight Tyler just again, and those were just very well said, Tyler. I've always been so impressed with you, and I'd like to encourage everybody out there to continue nominating so that we can highlight people like Tyler and give them the recognition that they deserve. So take a look at the program, look it up, and send in those nominations, please.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as a Blue KC Sporting Samaritan, Tyler was honored on the pitch, as we mentioned, before the Sporting KC match July 23rd. He got 4 tickets to the game, along with a gift card redeemable for Sporting KC merchandise, and most importantly, an unforgettable memory. If you know a teacher or student who makes Kansas City a better place like Tyler, nominate them to be recognized as a Blue KC Sporting Samaritan by going online to sportingkc.com/BlueKC. That's sportingkc.com/BlueKC. And as always, our thanks to Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City for making this program possible, to Matt Beasler for supporting teachers like Tyler. And congratulations, Tyler, man. It's great catching up with you. Keep doing your thing, man. You're making the world a better place, and we appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, guys. And thanks, Nate, for a couple years ago coming out and teaching my multimedia class a little thing or two about what it's like to be up in the booth. So I love what you guys are doing, and you guys are educators too. So
that was a great time. I love coming out and talking to those kids. That was awesome. Anytime. That's Tyler. We got Matt Beasler with us. We'll take a break. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, so I surprised Marco a little bit by telling him I wanted to close the show out talking a little baseball today. But look, the Royals are going to open their final homestand of 2022 tomorrow. Right now, they are 58-89. They are almost certainly going to lose over 90 games this year, but to also most likely going to avoid 100 losses, right? They don't even have 11 games left, do they? How many games? Actually, they do.
Yeah, they can. They
4, 5, 6, 7.
It was a rough last week.
15. Okay, 15 games left. They'd have to go, what, 4-11 to lose 100?
Yeah.
So it's possible. The way they've been playing, it's possible. The form on the field is not really the story right now, but there is, to me, a compelling story around the Kansas City Royals. We touched on it briefly on Friday. It kind of flew under the radar. I think if you're the Royals, in many ways, you're probably glad that the article written by Rustin Dodd and Alec Lewis of The Athletic that kind of deconstructs the problems they've had developing pitching over the years came out when it did, because honestly, most people in this town aren't paying attention. Don't really care at this point. It's all about the Chiefs. Maybe a little bit about college football, and baseball is a long, long forgotten thing. But the article, if you're in baseball and you live in it like the Royals front office does, and maybe diehard Royals fans, it was a piece. I mean, it said some things, you know, and they had sources from around the league, other baseball executives, you know, kind of pointing out things they think are a flaw in the system or the process that the Kansas City Royals had. Jeffrey Flanagan, who's a longtime, Kansas Cityan, retired journalist who still, though, has his finger on the pulse in many ways of the Kansas City Royals, covered them for quite some time. He took to Twitter yesterday and kind of talked about what he thinks might be happening with the Royals in the offseason. And he said, Sherman will make changes this fall. That Sherman, of course, being the owner of the Royals. He and his investors have lost a ton of money. The changes might not be as drastic as some fair weather fans want, but they likely will be substantial. He recognizes how Dayton turned this franchise around, and the younger fan base won't agree. Fair weather fans wanting to see major changes. Those are his words, not the Royals. I think we all ought to be careful about calling people fair weather fans when those are the people you're trying to get to come to your games, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it's been a rough several years since the Royals had those great seasons in 14 and 15, and I've been willing to give all kinds of grace for a long period of time because they did win a World Series, which I thought would never happen in this town again. But boy, calling people fair weather fans, I just think that's a little dangerous. Then there was this quote from Dayton Moore when he was being interviewed by Ryan LaFever on the Royals radio network, and this was a lot about that piece as well. Ryan asked him, how do you decide what's valid criticism and what's just someone shooting their mouth off? This was Dayton Moore's response. I'm going to read it transcribed word for word. Quote, we've always been very accepting and really willing to take criticism, especially from those that are looking at it with a critical eye and help us uncover blind spots. We welcome that type of debate and that type of information, but you're right. Anytime somebody does something anonymously, first of all, I think it's disrespectful, lacks integrity, and I think most of those comments come from somebody criticizing simply with a critical spirit, and they want to kick people when they're down, so to speak. And again, I think we're in a really good position going forward. So I just kind of let it go in one ear and out the other and try to stay positive with our people. Of course,
we had a lot of people in the organization disappointed in that piece because it wasn't factual and it left out a lot of important things that I think speak to the upside of where we are and where we're going with our pitchers. You just learn to move on from it. That's just the nature, unfortunately, of the business that we're in. But as I mentioned before, the time that we have with these pitchers, the growth that we're seeing, and I don't think anybody who watches this game and understands this game feels like that our pitchers have peaked out. Todd, quickly, your reaction to those comments from Dayton Moore, the comments from Jeffrey Flanagan, before I tell you anything that what I have to say about that.
Well, the front office has to be feeling some heat. And you remember, Dayton Moore is no longer the general manager. He's moved up, but he's still very hands-on with this. But they 1,000%.
J.J. Piccolo has told me he still is the man in charge. J.J. Piccolo reports to him.
No question.
So if people want to know what J.J. told me that.
No question about that. And you got that from the very first press conference when they announced J.J. was the GM. You feel like, well, he's the GM, but this is still Dayton's team. There's no question. Yeah. So there's no question they have to feel heat. They have a new boss. I mean, they have a new owner. And John Sherman. And when John Sherman bought this team, he didn't come in and clean house. So but they need to be better. So I think they're feeling some pressure for sure because they've already made changes. I mean, they fired their hitting coach a month into the season, and they catch heat for their pitching. And so they're definitely feeling heat.
Well, they let go of the guy that's in charge of pitching performance or whatever it's called. I can't remember his title. They just got let go last 2 weeks.
Yeah, so they're feeling something for sure. That's my takeaway of where we are right now.
Okay, so that's just – you're basically looking at the comments by Dayton Moore as a little maybe defensiveness.
Generally, you get that feel from him, yes.
Yeah. An article like that comes out, and you're feeling under attack and all that. And I – look, you can read at Royals Review. They really took on those comments from Dayton Moore, and they were pretty strong about their opinions about it, and you can go read that if you want to. I'm with you. I think we have a tendency anytime something is said or written about any of us – that's from a critical nature to get a little defensive. You know, you feel like you're under attack. And so to say that the article wasn't factual and things like that, I have my own thoughts about it, but I guess I understand where Dayton Moore might be coming from when it comes to that. I've talked to Rustin Dodd in the past week about this. I will tell you this much. Rustin Dodd is not a hatchet guy. We had Rustin Dodd on our show for a long period of time. He's a Kansas City guy. He loves Kansas City. He writes for The Athletic. He lives in New York now. He's not looking for opportunities to take shots at the Royals. I think if he were given the opportunity as to whether or not he wanted to write a feel-good piece about how great everything's going in Kansas City versus why the pitching is a mess, he would choose the former. But his job is to write what's happening and to expose what's happening, and I believe that's what he has tried to do. I know there were a couple of statistics that the Royals had given to him because he spoke with the Royals during the research of this piece that he didn't put in the article, and I've talked with him about it. And I think that it's one of those situations where, you know, people can manipulate statistics however they want. If you want to manipulate statistics to paint the picture of how terrible the Royals pitching is and how terrible the direction is, you can do that. And you can also find some stats that tell you why things are getting ready to head in the other direction. I kind of have a tendency to feel like we get bogged down in those stats, and I look at the macro. And this is the worst pitching staff in baseball by some of the most obvious metrics. Their walks plus hits per inning pitched is the worst in all baseball. They put more guys on base than anybody as a staff, top to bottom. If you want to single out the guys that were drafted since 2018 and say, oh, they're doing better, okay, maybe you can make that argument. I think it's a tough argument to make. Here's the bigger issue to me, and I've talked to JJ about this. He disagrees with me on this. They've got some pitchers. They've got some young pitchers in their organization who secretly agree with the things that were said by these anonymous sources that Dayton Moore disagrees with in the piece. That's a problem for them, in my opinion. I would tell JJ that next time I talk to him. I've told him that before. And maybe that's what gets down to what some of the critical comments he and the organization have had about some of the young pitchers. They got to get guys to buy in, whether it's because they're buying in because they make changes in their developmental system, and then those pitchers go, okay, now I got somebody that knows what they're doing here. I bought in. Or it's because they get other guys that are more willing to listen. it is a problem for this organization that they have young pitchers in their organization that don't believe in the system. And that has to be fixed. To me, like that overall, however they do it, to me, that is a big problem for this team, and I think it bears out on the field in what you're seeing.
Yeah, you have to all be on the same page. And that's really hard to do in a baseball organization. There's so many people at so many levels. You know, you're not all in the same building. You're not all together all the time. And they have to get that fixed for sure.
Okay. Well, hey, they open up their final homestand of the season tomorrow as they sit at 89 losses. A rough one yesterday for Boston. Hey, Todd, thanks for the time. Marco, thanks for the time. It was a good one. Tomorrow, I know we're going to have Lance Leipold on the show like we do every Tuesday, so that should be a lot of fun and a lot more football conversation coming your way as well. We will see you tomorrow right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Border Patrol has been brought to you by Walker Medical Linen Services, setting the standard in healthcare laundry services for hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in Kansas City. Walker Medical Linen delivers laundry you can depend on. HLAC certified to the highest standards. It's Walker Medical Linen Services, online at walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.